Marxists are the sworn enemy of Western civilization. Karl Marx crafted his communist ideology with the genocidal goal of destroying the European peoples. Key concepts of communism are atheism and materialism, that God and spirit do not exist. Germany was smashed at the end of World War II, and communism emerged triumphant. By controlling the political system, courts, mass media, educational system, and entertainment industries, Marxists have imposed a tyrannical, top-down agenda of globalism and immoralization on the West. The results are open borders, rampant crime, institutionalized corruption, sexual perversion, the destruction of the middle class, concentration of wealth, aimless youth with no purpose in life, and the hollowing out of Christianity. But Kyle McDermott's book, The Declaration of White Independence, demonstrates how we could unshackle our people from the communist ideology and obliterate atheism and materialism. The Declaration of White Independence is available at Dixie Republic. For more information, go to DixieRepublic.com. Get your copy of Kyle McDermott's Declaration of White Independence at DixieRepublic.com.
Katie Armor raised the standard. Finally, AR-500 steel core body armor that comfortably conforms to the chest and torso. Unique design distributes weight, feeling lighter, increases mobility, and lessens fatigue. Introducing the Combat Quad Bend CQB, a revolutionary plate forming process that caters to the end user. The CQB is an industry game changer, a must-have for the ladies. Available now, only at katiearmor.com, C-A-T-I-armor.com. Come and take it.
At Spikes Tactical, we are all shooters with a very simple mission. Make the best product we can perfect at the best possible price for our consumers. We strive to produce the best components and rifles available, with quality control second to none, because real-world events don't allow for a second chance. Whether you are an operator, competitor, or home defender, Spikes Tactical will serve you well. Go to SpikesTactical.com. Spikes Tactical, 100% American-made to the highest standard.
At Chambers Custom, we have one job. We strive to build the most obsessively reliable, accurate, and beautiful pistols for the discriminating gun owner. Fusing the ageless 1911 design with a 21st century approach to each part and component, Chambers Custom meticulously begins each pistol as a standalone project, creating a bespoke, handcrafted, peerless firearm. They integrate all of the internal, external, and intrinsic elements that make a custom 1911 unique. Go to ChambersCustom.com. Chambers Custom, truly the mechanical advantage.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your two-month supply, call now, toll-free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio at resolutionrdo.com.
You know, just like physical illness, mental illness can be overcome. We just got to inspire people to believe that.
The mental health community and the firearms industry spent way too much time running parallel to each other without communicating. It's time we change the narrative and destroy the stigma that we both face.
Walk the Talk America presents Guns and Mental Health, a podcast for firearms owners, clinicians, and the curious public. All right, everybody, we are live and we are doing Guns and Mental Health. It's our podcast from Walk the Talk America. If you're not familiar with what we do, just stay tuned, I guess. Walkthetalkamerica.org is where you can find more information. WTTA.org is the website. Take a free and anonymous mental health screening or share it with your friend. And this podcast, we're going to do something a little different. We don't do too many analyses or dismantlings or deconstructions of published pieces, but this one hit our radar, and it it created enough fervor and feedback that we decided that we had to address it. So Mike and I today are going to take a look at this U.S. News article entitled, "It's High Number of Guns, Not Mental Health Crises, That Drives U.S. Gun Deaths, Study," published September 11, 2024. And it's a recap of a paper that was published in the journal Plus One. If you're not familiar with PLOS One, it's actually really good resource for lots of research because it's free to access. You don't have to pay for subscription. And you can get stuff published. If you're like kind of an unknown person who's just researching something and you're not tied to any of the major institutions and you're struggling to get published, Plus One is a great place to go. So anyway, this paper that's published in Plus One claims that it's found this new information on, hey, surprise everybody, the reason that the U.S. has high firearm deaths is because the U.S. has high firearm prevalence. And to that, we mostly say, well, duh. I mean, anytime you find an abundance of something, you're going to find an abundance of something correlated to that thing. It's like, you know, saying, wow, we found a lot more paper cuts happen in libraries because there's more books with paper in the libraries. So this is not surprising, but the way it was presented is disappointing. And you think, well, who writes such a paper? And so we go straight to the authors, and the authors are, they appear to be cancer researchers with high credentials, lots of years of oncology research. And the lead investigator on the paper, Dr. Archie Blyer, who works out of Oregon Health and Science University, he's been in cancer his whole life. I couldn't find another firearm related, gun violence related, suicide, mental health related paper that he's touched, which I think is a little odd. And it may sound like I'm doing an ad hominem attack on the guy saying, well, you're a cancer researcher, what are you doing, you know, dealing in firearms? But that's not really the point. I think if you're really good at research, you can research pretty much anything. Although I do question why somebody who's got a career in that forever and ever decides to step out. I mean, it'd be very much akin to me as a mental health guy deciding that because pets are really good for mental health, I need to like publish a paper on what dog food is best for your dog. So that struck me as a little bit odd. So anyway, we get into this and they do a comparison of countries that they say have what's called a high sociodemographic alliance. Basically, the alliance is my word, but they call them high sociodemographic countries. But basically what that means is they took a bunch of countries where the demographics are similar, and the demographic criteria they use are usually something like, and they don't say what they use here, it just says high sociodemographic. So usually it's something like income, I'm struggling here. Income, it's early in the morning, ethnicity, age, gender, education, that are more or less the same. They're homogenized across the different countries. So the countries that they picked on for this comparison are like, well, obviously the U.S. and then they picked, I'll read a few of them here. Monaco, Netherlands, New Zealand, Northern Ireland, Norway, Qatar, San Marino, Scotland, Singapore, Slovakia, Slovenia. Anyway, there's 40 of them. South Korea is in there. United Arab Emirates, Lithuania, Luxembourg. So what they said is basically that all these 40 countries with the high sociodemographic correlation to the U.S. have similar rates of mental illness prevalence, but their firearm death rates are much, much lower. And it's like, well, yeah, because those countries don't own a bunch of guns. So I'm not sure what the point is that they're making here. The U.S. News article certainly doesn't draw any conclusion or offer any suggestion, which if you've listened to this show long enough, you know that Mike and I both are driven berserk by people who point out problems and then don't offer solutions. But if you dig into the paper and you read it and you scroll all the way down to the bottom, the very last paragraph reads, "In summary, mental disorder prevalence in the U.S. is similar in all major categories to its 40 comparable sociodemographic countries, including mental health disorders primarily associated with suicide. The country's firearm crisis should not be blamed on lack of mental health care, I don't know why you would blame a firearm crisis on lack of, I don't know if the firearms even are a crisis, but they make this statement. Reducing firearm prevalence, which is correlated with the country's firearm death rate, is a logical solution that has been applied successfully by other countries. So essentially they're saying, get rid of guns. Reduce firearm prevalence. Okay. But you have to go quite a ways to find that after all the scary language. So some people have picked this up and said, wow, that's a really interesting point. You know, maybe we should take a look at getting rid of guns to curb gun deaths. Seems like a logical conclusion to draw, right? Until you realize that there's no mechanism by which we can do this. And we're not sure that that's the actual solution. So if you've listened to me for any period of time, either on this or on Naga Notes or heard me speak, I have regularly said, in my world, in my field, at my agency, we treat problems, not symptoms. So I would ask what the problem is. I would ask these researchers, what is the problem? Is the problem firearm suicides? Because that seems a little narrow. I would want the problem to be suicides. I don't want people dying, right? And then I would ask, why are they suicidal? I don't care about the method or means. These people care about the method and means. And if you dig a little deeper into this, one of the authors on this study is Jaime Estrada, and he's the president and chair of the Texas Doctors for Social Responsibility. You can look up that organization if you'd like. And that group's aim is anti-gun. It's gun control. It's reducing gun violence, ostensibly. So I think the aim here is a little disingenuous. They published this paper to frame the problem as a firearm problem instead of something deeper, which is a people want to take their own lives problem. And if I'm being intellectually and academically honest, I'm not interested in the tool because suicide prevalence in this country continues to climb. And the proportion of people taking their lives by firearm is relatively on par with the rest of the data. These data they grab from 2000 to 2019. But the approximate 50% of suicides being completed by firearm hasn't really shifted. So you kind of lose me when you publish a paper that says guns are the problem, when I think suicide is the problem. The guns just happen to be prevalent and very lethal. So I'll pause there because I just threw a lot out. And if we've got people watching who have questions, please ask them, because I don't know necessarily what people are interested in on learning this. I can go a whole bunch of different directions. So
I got a question for you, Jake. So when I first got into this, it took me a minute for me to understand that you can't equate violence with mental health, right? Like that just because people suffer from mental illness doesn't mean they're going to do something violent. And when I finally wrapped my brain around that and was able to understand what they meant, right? When I tell the story over and over again, it's like the time when I think Dr. Jeffrey Swanson's like, you could take a firearm or, you know, hand it to 10 people that have bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, and they can go their whole life without hurting anybody. You can come home, catch your wife in bed with your best friend, and snap, right? Like that was the way it was framed to me, where I really understood what he was talking about. But how in this case, and obviously we're probably both going to throw our hands up, how in this case can they say it's not a mental health issue when we all agree, take the firearm out of it, people that are suicidal are going through a mental health crisis? Well, maybe a temporary one, right? But it is a crisis in that moment that is equated to mental health.
Yeah. Well, so here's the problem: that you can't take the firearm out of it in this case. If we're looking at just this paper, then that is their whole motif. Their whole motif is the firearm. So if reasonable people look at this and go, well, we'll remove the firearm, they'll go, well, look at 40 other countries. They don't have firearm deaths. They're obsessed with that. They're not obsessed with what I'm obsessed with, which is why are people wanting to die? So we've got research upon research upon research where anybody, you can swing a cat in the internet and hit any given paper that's going to tell you that there's like almost a 90% correlation between suicidality and mental illness. So people don't just take their lives for no reason. It's actually quite rare. We like to talk sometimes in the suicide community, like it's an impulsive decision. It's like, yeah, it is in that moment. Like you mentioned, in that moment, there's a crisis, and that moment can be a fleeting moment, or it can be like a 10-minute moment, or, but people are also chronically suicidal too. They live with this ideation of suicide and sometimes never act on it. They just are vaguely suicidal for years and years and years. It's like, okay, well, that's probably something approximating nihilism. I have no idea. Or they just don't want to live because they don't believe they have a purpose or whatever, all the way up to a very acute, I'm going to take my own life. In that moment, we want to examine means, and there's a reasonable approach to examining means and saying, you know, hey, you got a means in front of you. I'm looking at my desk here. I got like this coffee cup and I got my cell phone and some pens and, oh, by the way, a firearm, right? So if I've got a means of taking my life that I know will be more effective than the other means, of course, I'm going to use that one if I'm serious about taking my life. Most people are not serious about taking their life. What they're serious about is wanting the pain to end. So I would rather have a conversation about why are you in pain and what can we do to alleviate that pain than removing all possible means as a method of getting to keeping people alive. So the firearm is the problem here with the people who produce literature like this. They're not interested, I guess, or they're not intellectually honest enough to have a discussion about root cause mitigation. They'd rather just window dress with, hey, we're doing something by talking about reducing firearm deaths by reducing firearms. And I mean, I don't even want to get into the conversation about how that would happen, because it's impossible in a country with 300 million guns and 110 million gun owners. Like what are we talking about here? And that's what also drives me bonkers is give me a goal. Establish a problem. If the problem is gun deaths and you don't care about regular deaths, well, that's weird. I would want to have a discussion with you about why that is. But if the problem is gun deaths and we accept that and you want to take away guns, I would say, all right, well, what are you solving here? And is that really humanitarian? Or are you just like papering this over because you personally don't like the idea of firearms, but you apparently are comfortable with the idea of death? It's just very bizarre to me that something would be published like this and then picked up in a major news outlet and run. And I'll get into I'll get into what they were attacking in the first place, because they laid out a bunch of straw men in the paper itself. But I don't know if that answers your question there.
For almost 75 years, Strum, Ruger & Company Incorporated has been a model of corporate and community responsibility. Their motto, Arms Makers for Responsible Citizens, echoes their commitment to these principles as they work hard to deliver quality and innovative firearms. They offer consumers almost 800 variations of more than 40 product lines across both the Ruger and Marlin brands. And since 2021, Ruger has been a strong supporter of Walk the Talk America, in full alignment with this mission and philosophy. We invite you to check out Ruger.com and browse their multiple products and help support our mission along the way. Walk the Talk America thanks Ruger for its continued support of this show and our mission.
No, it does. It's just, like I said, it's one of those things where I look at it as suicide is the main issue when we're talking about deaths. And I've even seen some anti-gun organizations kind of come around on that, like almost like they've given in and said, okay, we have to like put this here to make it look like we actually really care about saving lives as opposed to gun control. But I always just, like I said, this one jumped right off the page, because it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, it's not a mental health issue. And I'm like, okay, but suicide is the majority of firearm deaths in the United States. You have to be able to point to mental health.
Yeah. Well, and this is why I think it's academically and intellectually dishonest to publish a piece like this. And here's why. If you pull up the paper, and it's hyperlinked in the article, so you go through the abstract, which is background, methods, results, conclusion, and you scroll down to the introduction. I'm just going to read this straight off. Maybe I can share my screen. I don't share screen. Fallacy of attributing the U.S. firearm mortality. All right, here we go. Introduction. The firearm and injury, and I'm reading this not for the list, the viewing audience, obviously they can read, they're grown adults with eyeballs. For the listening audience, I'll try to not blow through this. The firearm injury and death rates in the U.S. are at an all-time high and continuing to increase. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. Then the very next sentence, its gun lobby. Well, I don't know which gun lobby, I guess the U.S. gun lobby. Its gun lobby blames the crisis on citizens with mental health disorders and not on firearm prevalence. I'm going to pause there and deconstruct this. I don't know that the gun lobby blames the crisis on citizens with mental health disorders. I don't have any evidence of that. They're going to give me some, though, and I'm supposed to swallow this and not question it, apparently. Because the very next sentence is, the National Rifle Association, which arguably wields far greater influence over national firearms policy than does public opinion, I would argue that. And they say it's arguably wields, right? I would arguably say that the gun control entities wield far greater influence over national firearms policy because state by state over the last few years, we've seen red flag laws get introduced and transfer laws requiring background checks for transfers. The NRA is not stopping those. Those are, what are we now in like 22 different states or something like that where a red flag law exists? Yeah. So I would argue that the NRA actually does not wield far great influence over national firearms policy. And then it gives a little citation there. It says, you know, it wields influence or whatever. And the reference is something called Disarmed, the missing. Sorry, my thing's not hovering. The missing movement for gun control in America. Princeton University Press, copyright 2006. The missing movement for gun control in America is the reference for the NRA arguably wielding far greater influence. Okay, I will continue. We're continuing the same sentence. Lays the blame for mass shootings on untreated mental illness rather than unregulated guns. Okay, I don't know that the that they say that mass shootings are on untreated mental illness. I have a lot to say about that, and I might as well pause here and say it. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which is what we use in the U.S. and Australia and a few other countries, reference it, but they don't necessarily use it the way we use it, which is to give codes to people and send off to insurance. It's the DSM is very careful to say that without a robust biopsychosocial interview of the individual and without knowing a great deal about them and meeting criteria, you don't have a mental disorder. Just because somebody grabs a gun and shoots up a nightclub or a school does not mean that person has mental illness. That's not part of the definition of the book value. Now, the country may look at it and any reasonable person goes, well, you're probably not mentally stable if you're shooting people indiscriminately in a crowd. I totally agree with that. But as far as clinical diagnostics, we are not allowed to assess that. We can't. We can presume that probably the person's unstable. But in order to say you have a mental illness, there's a very precise formula and definition and criteria meeting that we have to go through in order to ascertain such a claim. So to say that the blame for mass shootings is not on untreated mental or is on untreated mental illness, I think is maybe that's some rhetoric that I'm not aware of. And then it diametrically opposes, says rather than unregulated guns. Now, I don't know what an unregulated gun is. That's not terminology I'm familiar with. I've heard of serialized firearms. I've heard of, legal guns owned by people who are not prohibited by federal law. But I don't know what an unregulated gun is. There's no gun regulation. I guess there's regulations to make sure that they're being produced safely and they're not going to inadvertently go off because they're dropped. That's a regulation, but that's just a throwaway phrase in pop psych. So we'll go on. Delays the blame for mass shootings on untreated mental illness rather than unregulated guns and proposed the creation of a national database of persons with mental illness. And the citation here is from an article in The Economist entitled Why the NRA Keeps Talking About Mental Illness Rather Than Guns. May 13, 2013. I didn't read the article, admittedly. Maybe the NRA did propose a national database of persons with mental illness. I don't know. Do you remember that, Mike? Is that a thing?
Yeah, I've heard that they pushed for that. But let's face it, there is kind of a registry for people that have checked themselves or been checked into a hospital in many cases, right? So, you know, one could make an argument that it exists.
Yeah. So anyway, so there's the first statement, right? Is that the authors of this paper have squarely put the NRA in the center of this thing and said, the NRA wields great influence over policy, lays the blame for mass shootings at the, you know, feet of untreated mental illness, and proposed the creation of a database of persons with mental illness. And then it goes on to say, indeed, the NRA's mantra, I've never heard the NRA's mantra be this, is, quote, the only guy that can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. The NRA's mantra is not that. That may be something that someone said at some point. I think, you know, maybe Wayne LaPierre said it at a conference or something. And this, then the reference was the BBC in 2012. So there's a quote, the NRA's mantra. So they've ascribed a couple of straw man fallacies here, which I don't know if you're familiar with the straw man fallacy. It's like the idea is you walk up to somebody and you have a man made of straw and you lay it at their feet and you're like, see that straw man that you made? And they're like, I didn't make that. You just threw it at my feet and pretended that it's mine. So this is what they do. They lay down an argument, presume it's factual, presume it's true, and then they go on to try to discredit that. So they say that the NRA has all this power. They're blaming mental illness instead of guns. And then, in fact, they reference mass shootings, which is really interesting to me because we all know the statistical prevalence of mass shootings is like infinitesimally small compared to homicides and suicides. Then the rest of the paper goes on to talk about suicide. So they've already straw-manned that also to frame up the rest of the paper. The rest of the paper talks about suicide, mental illness with firearms, but they frame it with an NRA statement about mass shootings. So it's already the wheels are coming off. Finally, recent availability of data on firearm homicides, suicides, and unintentional deaths and on mental disorders in the world's countries and territories allows testing of the hypothesis that the country's mental health is a primary reason for its firearm mortality crisis. All right. So that all being said, I'm going to stop my share here and we can pick that up later. Mike, you've got an article that says the U.S. actually doesn't have very much firearm death compared to most other countries.
Yeah, I was scouring everywhere I could to see where we ranked. And it's really funny because this goes back to what you could do statistics. But one of the articles that I read said that we were 28th in the world right now. I think about the countries that were ahead of us when it came to like gun deaths and per, you know, X population. And it was all the countries that most people say we should let the immigrants in here come from, which I'm not trying to make an argument one way or another, but it's all the countries Trump said were shitholes. Remember that? It's really interesting. It's kind of a weird dynamic there. Like, hey, come up here, become residents of our places, but all these places have insane gun violence. It's like the Honduras. It's Venezuela. Yeah, Venezuela. Like it's all those spots. But it's, you know, to me, it's kind of shocking when people hear that. And I remember, you know, I sent somebody the article and I was like, see where we rank. And they're like, wow, I didn't realize we were that far down compared to what you'd think. And I'm just like, yeah, you could read one article that says we lead it. We're number one, but I guess it depends on how you're tracking that, right? Like suicide by firearm, I'm sure we surpass everybody. And Brazil was on that list. Brazil was on that list as well. Like that's ahead of us.
So here's the thing. If I'm the authors of this study, I go, well, that's exactly why I controlled for sociodemographics, because those countries aren't like us. I wanted to find countries that were like us. And if I'm reading between the lines there, it sounds almost xenophobic to me to just say, well, we're going to tackle the civilized countries, you know, South Korea and Andorra and Australia and Wales. We're not going to look at the countries that have rampant street violence and crushing poverty and, oh, by the way, socialist governments. And why do they have socialist governments? Because they don't have firearms to defend themselves. We're not going to look at those. We'll just conveniently carve those people out, and we're going to look at this mental health prevalence thing. Yeah, because I'm pretty sure that the prevalence of mental illness in the countries you just listed probably is, I don't know, it may be actually totally undocumented because their infrastructure is so poor. So what they're trying to do is frame this up to say mental illness across reasonably comparable countries is the same. Firearm deaths in the U.S. is overwhelmingly large. It's got to be the guns. Okay, and that brings up another point that drives me batty, which is a singular causality attribution. Well, what do I mean by that? Okay, glad you asked. When we look at a problem, we'll take a vehicle. I'm not very good at cars, so this should be a really good analogy because it's going to sound really awful. If I hear a noise I don't like in my car, and it sounds like a whap, 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 and previously I've heard a whap, 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 and I knew that it was because some mice had nested in my HVAC system, I might immediately draw the conclusion that that's the case. Now, I have some bias there. I'm looking to confirm my bias that it's got to be mice nesting in my HVAC. But it could be a whole bunch of other things. What I failed to do in attributing the whap, whap, whap sound to the mice nesting is I've taken one singular thing and created the cause and effect continuum. So mice nesting, one of the mice died, got wrapped in the fan blower, whatever, and is now hitting the something inside. Cause, dead mouse, effect, whap sound. Now it could also be a whole bunch of other things. It could be a loose, fan belt. It could be some part that fell off. It could be a screw that broke loose and the part of the screw is rattling. I have no idea, right? I told you I'm not good at cars. But if I fail to consider those things, I may inappropriately and inaccurately attribute the cause to what I'm seeing. So in this case, we've got attribution of the cause being firearms to the completion of firearm suicides. Now, yes, if we separate firearms, we don't have firearm suicides, and we covered that before. Do we still have suicides? And there's the real question. If I go back to my car analogy, I have to ask, why were mice in my HVAC in the first place? Do I need to seal something up? Do I need to make it less attractive for mice to crawl in there? I need to figure out why mice are in there in the first place, not just get rid of the mice and replace the HVAC. That true story, by the way, if that sounds oddly specific, it's because it happened to me. It was gross and expensive. And this is what's going on here. I don't particularly care about the means by which people take their lives. I care about why they're taking their lives. And it may sound a little weird for a guy in mental health with a, with firearms who works with Walk the Talk America to say, well, what are you doing this for then? It's because we continually say we want to get upstream from this. It'd be really easy just to wave a magic wand and say, get rid of all the guns, but that doesn't get rid of the violence and the mental illness and the suicide. So the implied causality. So we've got causality and then we've got implied causality. There's an implied causality in a paper like this. And I've seen lots of this stuff tossed around. It's like, if you just get rid of the guns, everything would be fine. And that's just as fallacious. It's not true. People have been warring since long before gunpowder was invented. Now, is war mental illness? I don't know. Certainly probably some, sociopathic narcissists will declare war on others. There's an invasion in Europe that's been ongoing for a couple of years now by a sociopathic narcissist who wants to take some territory for his own country. I don't know, right? Like, should we just go internationally ban arms? That sounds, go to the UN, ban arms. By the way, the Texas Doctors for Social Responsibility is all about nuclear disarmament too. So, I could probably get on board with that. I don't think we need nuclear weapons. But what are you doing? Like, what are we doing? What is the goal? Are you going to get there? Is it reasonable? And what action are you taking? Are we just sitting there wringing our hands and clutching our pearls and saying, this is a problem without actually moving on something? Walk the Talk America prefers education over restriction. And so we'd like to teach people to store and stage their firearms better so that they don't get used in times of crisis. They don't get stolen by people who smash into your house and want to take your stuff. They don't get picked up by teenagers and used inappropriately.
What's in a name? If that name is Ace Firearms, you've just entered a very expensive business. First, a fully appointed gun shop with all the guns, ammo, and accessories you could possibly imagine. But then you enter the manufacturing facility that is home to Red Alligator Concealment, Militia Arms Customs, and so much more. Ace Firearms is beyond a simple gun shop. This is a totally peerless operation. To find out more, go to acefirearms.com. Ace Firearms. This is only the beginning.
Among Walk the Talk America's partners, Arms Corps may have the most colorful history of them all, but then again, that likely happens when you have a company that's lasted for more than a century. Started in 1905 in the Philippines and expanding operations to right here to Nevada in 1985, Arms Corps offers some of the finest firearms you'll find on the market, from shotguns to 1911s, and from ammunition to a competitive shooting team, Arms Corps offers a lot. But there's something more. Arms Corps is the first manufacturer to print the free and anonymous mental health screenings link offered through Walk the Talk America's website right there on their packaging. If you buy an Arms Corps product, you will not only see our flyer inside, but you may actually see the screenings link printed on the side of the box. Go to armscor.com, that's armscor.com, to find out more about their heritage, their products, and their competitive shooting team. We're proud and thankful to have Arms Corps as a partner.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Supply chains are the lifeblood of business. It's time to learn to lead in this in-demand field. The Ohio State University Fisher College of Business offers an online Master of Supply Chain Management degree. This new program builds on their reputation in supply chain management and business education. Each online class blends self-paced live learning and immersive classes. Earn your Master of Supply Chain Management degree in as little as 15 months. Visit go.osu.edu/MSCM to learn more. The Ohio State University Fisher College of Business, where principled leaders are created.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Jake, it's time to spotlight one of my favorite organizations in the firearms industry, the National Association of Sporting Good Wholesalers.
Yeah, let's do it.
Not only was I a customer when I owned Eagle Imports for many years, but they're also a sponsor of Walk the Talk America and our mission. The NASGW is comprised of wholesalers, manufacturers, independent sales reps, media, and service providers, both national and international, all whom have a primary focus on shooting sports equipment and accessories. As a trade association representing the business interests of its members, NASGW's mission is to bring shooting sports buyers and sellers together. For more information about the NASGW, visit the association's website at nasgw.org.
That was a good read, Michael.
We got some people in the chat here.
Yeah, let's get to that.
Yeah, catch up on what DJ's saying.
I think we can go back to DJ was wondering, like, what's a good resource that, like, Walk the Talk uses for the general public to maybe educate themselves on all these topics?
I always default to the FBI and the CDC when it comes to numbers, right? Because that just seems to be universally accepted by everyone, regardless of what side they're on. Usually they find those numbers acceptable. But I don't know if there's anything else you use, Jake.
It's very hard because when you get a paper like this, which is, I mean, it ranges between no shit and bullshit. it's hard for the layperson to take that apart, to disseminate, disassemble it, because they use a lot of highfalutin language, like socio-demographic. They use terminology and academic parlance that's sometimes honest and sometimes is intentionally obfuscating, meaning to, you know, it covers up what's really going on. And it took me, what, 5 or 6 minutes just to take apart one paragraph that I would say is intentionally designed to distract the viewer from, or the reader from what's really going on. But then there's the larger picture issue of something like this, where if you're not in my field and you haven't gone through a stats course a couple of times, you're not going to know to ask, I'm going to click on this thing here. Does Norway, let's pick a country. Does Guam, does Iceland, does Estonia, Denmark, do these countries diagnose mental illness the same way? Do they treat it the same way? If their threshold for diagnostics is not the DSM, and the DSM right now in its fifth iteration, text revision, holding in front of me right here, lots of pages, very thick book, 1,050 pages to be exact, very high bar to meet, or to clear, I guess. The criteria are so stringent and the language so restrictive that it should be really hard to diagnose somebody with a mental illness. If their bar is lower and their criteria aren't as stringent, it could look like their country has more mental illness than it actually does. And there's no way to know that or to cross-check it because the systems and methods aren't even aligned. So there's that. And then there's the correlation of suicidality, which this paper doesn't go into. We don't know what the suicidality prevalence is in those countries based on the prevalence of mental illness. I don't know that they're as tightly correlated as the US, which has, you know, like I said, 90% correlation from, you know, suicide completion to prior mental illness. What does their treatment look like? What do their systems of care look like? You know, so you read a paper like this and you go, oh man, that's a big deal. Wow. We should probably do something about this. Okay, well, cool. Let's do something. Walk Talk America is doing something. What do you want to do? So there's really no way I could teach somebody in a, you know, 30 or 40 minute podcast about how to examine critically an academic paper and decide whether or not it's authentic, has high fidelity and should be trusted, or if it's just propagandized nonsense from an activist group that clearly wants to push a political agenda. I can't teach you that. All I can say is dig into the literature, find the numbers themselves, and see what your spidey sense tells you. What seems reasonable is, in a country that has 4% of the world's population and 25% of the world's firearms, if those numbers are to be believed, and I have no reason to not believe them, then of course we're going to have more negative outcomes of guns. But I would also counter that, given the prevalence of firearms in our country, we should have a lot more gun violence. We should have a lot more firearm suicide, and we don't. Like, we should be having, like, look at those 27 countries that outstrip the US. Like, their gun prevalence is far lower, but their violence rates are much higher. Why? Because they're not responsible. They don't have a culture of responsibility and safety. We do. And that's one cool thing. Possibly, yeah, start to get ranty.
No, it's great. I love it. But, you know, for example, DJ, you said you could shoot holes in the FBI thing. Absolutely, right? Like, that's the problem with statistics everywhere. Unreported things, people who don't contribute, like you said, law enforcement agencies, some of it's voluntary, but you use statistics, you find out what speaks to you in those statistics, right? So if I'm having an argument with somebody and, you know, they say, oh, you can't use the FBI because of this, right? Then they can't use the FBI because of that, because every time you look at some sort of report, and I was talking to Kevin about this yesterday, I can find a way to make what Walk the Talk America does the most important thing in the country by looking at statistics. And that's why I lean into statistics, even negative ones, right? Like, I'm just like, okay, give it to me, because I'm going to tell you, as soon as you give me your statistic and wherever it's from, I'm going to say, well, that's why you need Walk the Talk America. That's why we're the most important organization on the planet, right? And I said that to Patrick from MedAlert, Gun Alert. I said, because he's the one that originally sent me this article that caused a lot of the conversation that's been happening, is I said, the greatest thing about this article is that you're able to say, this is why I'm here. This is why Gun Alert is the greatest product on the planet. Like, that should be how you end every conversation with someone that asks you, what's your opinion on this piece? But the FBI statistics, I mean, one of the ones that always stands out to me is that's where I learned that hands and feet kill more people every year than AR-15s, right? That's something I'm going to gravitate towards, just like everybody else does with statistics. So it's like, you got to find, and it goes back to what you're saying, is the nuance, right? How do you use the statistics, whether you agree with them or not, to have a nuanced conversation with somebody that may disagree with you?
What's really frustrating, I think, for me is that there's bad actors everywhere, and we all can look at the same data set and draw different conclusions. And based on what you want to have happen, you can use that however you want. And the uneducated people who don't do this for a living, and I'm not saying they're uneducated broadly, I'm saying they're not educated in this particular topic, which usually, you know, our legislators are comprised of these people. These people are, they comprise the policy making bodies. So I roll into random legislator who may be a shop owner in central Reno doing her due diligence in Carson City, trying to pass good laws for the citizens of Nevada. I come from pro firearms community. I go, hey, there's a problem here. I would really like you to make X law to solve Y issue. And it'll be pro firearm. But I really need you to do this, right? And we'll use Louisiana, for example, because I think that's a very good one, that it protects firearms retailers and range owners from suicides if they take in a gun and give it back too soon, and somebody does something negligent or irresponsible with the gun. The shop that gave it back to them cannot be sued. I think that's brilliant. Now, my bias is toward liberty. My bias is toward freedom. My bias is toward doing the right thing in a spirit of humanity. It's not to control others. So I will bring that bias into the legislature. And if I'm talking to this gal who's from my district or whatever, and she goes around to the rest of her caucus and she's like, Jake's got a really good idea. Look at these data. We think that this can certainly help, in time of crisis. And they pass that law. All she's doing is listening to me. I'm the expert. I'm the one who has all the information. She's just trusting it. Now, flip that around. You got somebody who wants gun control, for example, and they go in there and do the same exact pitch with the same exact data set, the same exact statistics, and go, the best way that we can prevent firearm deaths in a time of crisis is red flag laws. We're gonna go to the judge and we're going to pitch our case and he's going to issue an order and the deputies will show up and take the guns and they'll hold them until the person's out of crisis. That very same legislator may go, yeah, that sounds really good to me, because they have no idea. And the difference there about why red flag laws are sweeping the nation and, I don't know, laws protecting the firearms retailers and ranges are not, is funding. Like, Bloomberg and March for Our Lives and Moms Demand, they've got gazillions of dollars and they don't spend it on advertising. They spend it on hiring policymaking influence through lobby efforts. So while Jake gets to go down to Carson City and take time out of his schedule for this one big heavy lift, they've got an army of people whose job it is to convince the unwitting legislators to go, yeah, it sounds like a reasonable solution to me. Because there's an absence of the pro-liberty people in the room. Like, we just don't have enough of us because we're not aggressively pursuing legislative involvement. We're not aggressively pursuing policy interventions because that's not our thing. Liberty is our thing, right? So it's really easy to get run over by the same exact data sets, just presented differently. Now, if you take multiple data sets like this paper's done and you draw spurious conclusions, you know, you end up with a bad paper that draws spurious conclusions. I mean, I don't even know about some of these countries. Like, you know, did they count substance abuse in mental illness? Like, how do they measure that? I mean, our own DSM has evolved like 3 times in the time I've been practicing. The criteria are completely different than they were 14 years ago. So,
yeah. Well, and what other aspects of freedom do these countries sacrifice as well? Right. Some places don't have free speech. You know, Kevin, I want to kind of shift towards, I guess, the rebuttal to somebody that is gun neutral or curious and says, you know, like, what do you say to somebody that presents this paperwork or, you know, this paper? And one thing I want to add before I get Kevin's perspective, because Kevin had a great perspective. Kevin sometimes can be a very calming voice to me, because I was just like, this is what I would say when I first presented him with the paper. I know you, Jake, were like, this is just trash. Like, you know, but, you know, well, Kevin.
Real quick, it's not trash per se. It's probably a decent enough paper for a grad student to produce. Like, that's okay. You did a little bit of an analysis of data, and you compared some countries, and you drew this conclusion. It's not good. I would certainly expect better from somebody who's been practicing for 30 years. So it's bad research in that it doesn't directly assert a problem and then try to solve a problem. But it's also like we said, it's kind of like, well, no kidding. It's a duh paper. Like it's just low level thinking. So sorry, go on.
We want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors, Chattanooga Shooting Supplies, Inc. CSSI was founded in 1977 by two families that had a passion for hunting and the outdoors. That same passion holds true today for the second generation of family members and their 200-plus employees. Own a gun store or range? If so, you understand the importance of two-step distribution to help you meet the demand of your customers. Their mission is to exceed their customers' expectations with a strong service focus from a knowledgeable sales staff, an assortment of trusted and well-known brands, competitive pricing, and timely shipping. With over 50,000 SKUs of shooting and hunting related products, they are in the business to help customers succeed. Learn more at ChattanoogaShooting.com.
No, so what I try to do when I talk to people, especially about freedom, because not everyone cares the same or feels the same way that I do about freedom and that you do about freedom. Some people are willing to give up freedoms, and they're okay with that. But I want to bring this back, and I hate to be this guy right now because I really am not this guy, but I want to bring this back to the COVID times, right? And what did we learn? We learned 3 things, I think, or at least I did, that were pretty eye-opening. I learned that the government definitely cannot guarantee my safety, and that's in all aspects of life. I learned that freedom can be taken away from you by governors. Like, I never realized like how powerful governors were, like almost more than I started to focus on governors more than I did president, right? Because governors are like, nope, we're shutting that shit down. Like, you are not going to work. And if you do not get this vaccine, you will be fired. And, you know, businesses started to take that stance. So we learned that. And then we also learned that on January 6th, our freedom, our democracy almost collapsed by a guy who looks like Jamiroquai storming the Capitol, right? So a group of people that look like our military should have been able to take out in 25 seconds. Maybe that's like way too long, but maybe they were just like talking and laughing. And then, right, we got, okay, but I'm not trying to make light of January 6th. But what I'm saying is, I was told by many of my friends that we almost lost our democracy. Our government almost fell on January 6th. I'm not giving up my guns. And this goes back to the whole genie out of the bottle argument. Like, those 3 things right there showed me that we can't get rid of guns. They made the argument for why we have guns. So I just want to say that for the listeners. Sometimes you got to make people see a certain light, because every one of my friends that is anti-gun that I say these three things to about COVID, that COVID era, they all agree with me on those three things. Like, they don't deny that. Now, they might have an argument on why that stuff was necessary, but I think people need to understand why guns are so important to people. And that's part of the nuance of having the conversation. Kevin, do you remember how you phrased it to me when you said, this is how I would approach this nuanced argument with somebody that really believes in this paper?
Give me a little refresher, because we've done a lot of analysis. I think I know where you're going, but certainly yeah, softball.
You were kind of like, meet them where they're at, right? Which is our mantra on this show. Thanks to Chris and Conti. Everybody take a drink. Yes, sir. But you were like, I would dive into this, but you kind of hit them with the kid gloves. I love that you don't remember what you said and what you said.
That's my how weakness. Impactful you are. Yeah. That's how unremarkable you are, Michael.
I mean, I kind of have the same perspective now. All right, everybody on this show agrees that the genie's out of the bottle. Taking away guns isn't the answer. Improving mental health for gun owners is a solution that Walk the Talk believes in. Mental health, probably services and professionals could use some support understanding gun owners better. And then the general public, a lot of people in the general public would read that and be like, oh no, this is an issue. Just like we had people come to you, Mike, and say that. And a lot of people's response is, well, go educate yourself. Well, that seems like sending a first grader to an elementary school and be like, go educate them yourself. They wouldn't know where to start. They wouldn't even know if the information's good. And people often go to who they're talking to because they see that individual who's more educated in that topic than themselves. Now, we don't need to go at people with the purpose to change their mind right there, but just give different perspectives, like you and I did to Patrick when he had the idea of mandating more training, and like, oh, here's some alternative points of view. And we saw that mind shift in live time, to where educating the general public from gun owners who have different perspectives in a nuanced way and a respectful way is going to have a huge impact. Was that anywhere close to what I said yesterday?
No, that sounds like you nailed it. Yeah. like I said, you have the ability to kind of, because I consider you like Patrick, right? Like, except you're farther along. Is like you had to kind of be thrown into this, dive into this. You didn't necessarily, I mean, I don't think you ever had an issue with firearms, but it's kind of like learning what our culture, the 2A culture, is all about. It's like you've been on a 4-year cultural competence course with us, right? And now sometimes you can anticipate things and the blind spots that we may have and still be able to kind of come with this like rational answer of not getting emotional, you know, which yeah. I pride myself on and Jake prides himself on, but sometimes I think we are too damn close, right? It just happens over time. Yeah. These feelings start to grow deep.
I feel bad for the general public because they only get the one side of the conversation often. Of if someone read that article, they'd be like, yeah, the NRA is terrible. That's awful. Us three, we all know the NRA isn't as impactful and influential as that article makes it seem. But yeah, look at us. I'm 4+ years into this work and expertise. Jake's at least, 6+ years just with Walk the Talk America. Mike, you're 6-8 years deep into this work. Like, we all have a lot of expertise and organizations come to us for our opinions, and that's just not the general public. It reminds me of that werewolf game that I think was invented in Russia or whatever, where the uninformed majority will get beaten by an informed minority every single time. And that's kind of the anti-guns side, is they put all this information out there that seems really logical and like, yeah, easy to get on board with. And the 2A gun side needs to do a better way and be like, wait, no, look, here's our perspective, and do it in a way that is respectful and not just jump to the prep from my cold dead hands or stuff like that.
Well, and not argumentative, right? Like the one thing that I've seen that really works in politics is rhetoric. When you repeat talking points over and over and over and over, eventually people it's like you get used to it and it becomes common discussion, even if it's not correct, or even if it was correct at one time and changes over time. And that's what something in our, people in my profession would call an introject. It's a Carl Jung Jungian concept where it's an unquestioned belief or assumption about the way things are. It's an introject. And we don't question these things because it's largely inconvenient or inefficient. And especially if we learned them young, we just don't know how to question our beliefs that we were given by people. So these introjects can come from culture, media, music. And I mean, you think about music too, like think back to some song that you heard the first time and you're like, that song sucks. And then the radio keeps playing it over and over and you're like, that song's not so bad. Oh, and then you know the lyrics, right? And then all of a sudden you're requesting it. I can think of a zillion of them, and I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus now because some of them are my favorite artists, but there's a handful of songs out there that like never should have made the radio. But now they're like ultra popular. That's what happens with rhetoric in the political realm. And we just happen to be talking about gun control versus gun not control. But the gun control crowd has been very good at its rhetoric for years. And the NRA was really good at its rhetoric for years. And I think from my view, the gun community got a little complacent and took for granted the effort involved in having conversations down at the state houses. And what stepped into that void was the gun control people. You got a series of school shootings that happened in over the span of about 10 or 12 years. They make the headlines. They're awful to watch. They shock everybody to their core, and they galvanize spokespeople that then pull in some followers. And often Mike and I found in that crowd of the followers who are just like wearing the orange t-shirts or whatever, they're like, yep, guns are a problem, blah, 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 blah. But I own guns. I just think they should be controlled more. It's like, all right, well, let's start there. What do you think you can control about these guns? And then one by one, the dominoes start falling. It's like, oh yeah, you're right. Suicide is the biggest component or biggest piece of the pie chart on firearm deaths. Well, what leads to suicide? Usually mental illness. All right. Well, what are we going to do about that? Is a magazine capacity limit going to solve the suicide problem? Well, no, I guess it won't. How about an AR-15 ban? Is that going to solve the suicide problem? Well, let's statistically look at the prevalence of rifles in mass shootings or any shootings. Really, really low. So then you get down to, well, what are you doing? There you go. I guess we do need to look more at the mental health angle. We do need to keep people healthy. We do need to teach people firearm safety at a young age in schools that doesn't contain the phrase separate ammo from gun. Like maybe we do need to talk about responsible storage more often. Maybe if you're really hopped up on the legislative angle and you really want some policy, maybe the policy needs to be a tax break for buying a locking device. Maybe the policy angle needs to be indemnification, hold harmless for the shops that take in the guns in a time of crisis. Maybe you need to reexamine some of the background check stuff and give a Good Samaritan waiver for people who are trying to do the right thing in a time of need, so they don't take their friend's guns while they're suicidal and end up becoming a felon. You know, like there are things that can be done at a policy on the policy end that aren't onerous to firearms owners and actually probably open up freedom a little bit. But those conversations aren't being had because the rhetoric is just so deafening and it's so one directional. And then it's not helped by so-called academic papers like this one that people get to point to and be like, I'm just going to hold something up here. See, I have this paper. It's published by researchers and it says that guns are the problem. It says it right there on the title. Pass this law, legislator. Like, well, legislator's really busy. They don't have time to read it and dig into it like Walk the Talk America does on its podcast. So they go, yeah, all right, here's a new law. And then all the gun owners roll their eyes. Everybody's afraid of becoming a felon. And then nobody goes into care because they think that Jake and Jake's facility are going to pick up the bat phone to the government and tattle on him for being a gun owner.
And then they get worse because they don't get help. And then it is a mental illness problem.
Among Walk the Talk America's partners, Arms Corps may have the most colorful history of them all. But then again, that likely happens when you have a company that's lasted for more than a century. Started in 1905 in the Philippines and expanding operations to right here to Nevada in 1985, Arms Corps offers some of the finest firearms you'll find on the market. From shotguns to 1911s, and from ammunition to a competitive shooting team, Arms Corps offers a lot. But there's something more. Arms Corps is the first manufacturer to print the free and anonymous mental health screenings link offered through Walk the Talk America's website right there on their packaging. If you buy an Arms Corps product, you will not only see our flyer inside, but you may actually see the screenings link printed on the side of the box. Go to armscor.com, that's armscor.com, to find out more about their heritage, their products, and their competitive shooting team. We're proud and thankful to have Arms Corps as a partner.
Yeah, it's, I tell people all the time, hey, if there is no alcohol, there's no DUIs, right? But for some reason in this society, a couple months ago, I was reading something about a guy who killed a family of six drunk driving. That doesn't even matter to anybody because people like their alcohol. You know what I mean? But if I was somebody who didn't like drinks, I mean, or, you know, didn't drink, I'm sure if someone passed a law that banned alcohol, it wouldn't affect me one way or another. And that's a lot of the issues with firearms, right? Like, people don't own firearms. A lot of people aren't. It's not because they hate them. It's just they don't have them. So they don't really think about the freedom element when it comes to firearms. They just think of all the negative outcomes, right, that are shown to them all the time in the media over and over again. But there is hope. I do have some faith in Hollywood. The recent talks that I've had with a few people that have really taken a vested interest in wanting to promote, you know, responsible storage and just safer messages when it comes to what they're writing in scripts, and we'll see how that pans out. But I think we've approached this all wrong. And I hate to just default to the genie's out of the bottle, but the genie is out of the bottle, folks. And I've said this time and time again, one of the most shocking moments when I speak in front of a crowd that isn't pro 2A or from gun culture is when I say, when I owned Eagle Imports, at the height, we were doing 60,000 to 80,000 guns a year. And we had no law enforcement, no military contracts. You know, it was all civilians, regular people, everyday Americans that wanted to defend themselves or shoot for sport or for whatever the numerous reasons there are that people are into it. And that's just fact. And I was a small company. So what are the large companies doing? That is the moment where I see everybody's eyes become like quarters. And they're like, oh, my God, what did he just say? Because usually when I ask that question privately to people that are like, want to have a nuanced conversation, I go, when I own this gun company, how many guns do you think I sold a year? And almost all of them say like 5,000, 10,000. You know, I think it's just like, that's an acceptable number in their head. So we have a lot of guns out there, and they're not going back in the bottle.
DJ's asking, and we say that in our presentation, actually, in the training. I say, we need to meet this issue where it is, not where we want it to be, not where it could be someday, not where it is elsewhere, but right where it is. And right where it is a lot of guns are out there, and a lot of people own them, and a lot of people aren't interested in giving them up. And a lot of those people are in the gun control organizations, and they do own guns, and they stand in front of you and say, as a gun owner, I embrace this proposal, right? So there's a very nebulous interpretation of what it means to be a gun owner too. And that's something we have to teach also. There's a whole bunch of people out there who own firearms and think that these quote unquote common sense gun laws are perfectly acceptable. It's like, well, yeah, perfectly acceptable to you. But right next to you is somebody who thinks it's not, and you guys need to talk about this. So DJ says, you know, there's gotta be an emotional component, or there's gotta be a way to get the conversation going. He says, maybe emotion is the way to crack the thing. I actually disagree with that. I don't think emotion is the way to do it. A big part of my professional life is teaching emotional functioning. And I think when you act out of emotion, you do things you don't like and you will later regret. So I would prefer to act out of logic and reason. However, getting people's attention through emotion is not a bad idea. And then reasonably presenting something. So one way that I would suggest we do this is whenever you see something that publishes like a paper such as this one, I go, like Mike suggested early on, great, that's exactly why Walk the Talk America exists. And they go, what? What is Walk the Talk America? Or you say something like, yeah, I know, prevalence of guns is a real problem for suicide by firearm. That's why we need to teach people responsible storage and intervention in a time of crisis. You just remove the gun completely. You say, we're not talking about getting rid of guns. That's dead on arrival. Instead, you have to counter with something. And what you counter with is what's already in place, what we're already doing. And this, the flaws in this paper just blow my mind. But let's presume that mental illness is a problem, right? Because even at the end of the article, they go, well, we don't want to whitewash the mental illness issue in this country. It's like, well, you kind of did because you kind of led with that. But let's say that, right? Go, yep, that's why we need to treat mental illness better. That's why we need preventative care paid for by insurance companies. People go, what? And they cock their head like the RCA dog looking at, you know, listening to his master's voice coming out of the phonograph. And you say, yeah, mental illness treatment is only good if you have a diagnosed condition. That's the only way your insurance is going to pay for it. No one knows that. And I talk till I'm blue in the face until it changes. And I will keep talking about it and I'll keep beating that drum. Every single time, I'm not kidding you guys, every single time I bring this up, except to known audiences, every single person in the room is like, really? Yeah, really? Like, there is no preventative care for mental health. There is no pop the hood and check the belts and hoses four times a year, like you get in dentistry or optometry or whatever. Pay for preventative care. Keep people healthy. Stop letting them slide into degenerative crisis. That's how you get ahead of it. All right, you want to stop suicide? Let's keep people healthy. You want to stop firearm suicide? Teach the gun owners how to recognize their own mental issues. Teach the gun owners to store responsibly. Make it easier for them. Say things like, practice retrieving your gun as much as you practice putting lead on target. Right? There's no way that we can't solve this. Like, this is a solvable problem. Get families back together. Get fatherhood back in the home. Educate your children. Keep them in school. Get them off social media. Take the screens away. Turn off the internet. There's no reason a kid under the age of 16 should be on social media anyway. If I had my druthers, it would be 18. And that's from research by Jonathan Haidt anyway. So, you know, we gotta start having these conversations and push the needle forward on cultural change and family systemic change, not just remove an object. Oh, come on. Like, no, that's a non-starter.
And that's why I love what Derek's doing with KidSafe and Devin's doing with Kids the Kings, right? Just introducing firearm safety as a whole responsibility, but also having elements of emotional functioning, you know, teaching about PTSD, trauma. If you look at we have some new videos coming out from the last event that happened last Saturday for Kids the Kings. And when I see some of these kids talking and engaging in these conversations, that's an emotional thing for me. And it's a positive one, right? Because I'm looking at these kids that, thanks to Kevin Dixie and Devin Perkins and the guys at Gorillas in the Mist, these kids are much more grounded when it comes to firearms than I ever was at that age. I'm sure these kids aren't going to have a negligent discharge like I did, you know, when I was a kid, because no one educated me about, you know, one in the chamber. And that makes me proud. I'm proud of Devin that he saw this, that there's this need, because now you have these kids that were never given any hope that can potentially grow up to be competition shooters, leaders in their community, you know, force multipliers in their community, and gun instructors, you know, for safety and just regular sporting use. Like, this is a demographic that never got that look. And that's emotional to me. And when the anti-side wheels out kids that have been affected by firearms death, that's, you're never going to beat that, right? When it comes to the emotional heartstrings that are being pulled on. But I think there are other kids that can come out and on our side and say, hey, look, you know, I'm affected by gun violence just as much as everybody. But here's what I'm doing. I'm turning it into a positive, and it's been a positive influence on my life. So I think adding the mental health component to firearms, which we always thought guns and mental health were mutually exclusive, was one of the most brilliant things we did, not only because it's the right thing to do, but just what it's going to cause when you have a bunch of leaders in communities walking around saying, guns are normal, and so is your mental health. Let's put them together and come up with plans to help save lives and mitigate the negative outcomes of firearms.
Go
ahead, Kevin.
I have a question for both of you. We talk a lot about like getting upstream and meeting this issue where it's at. We've kind of touched on a lot of important topics, but what in your mind are the core kind of elements to start working on, and what does getting downstream look like to people that might hear those phrases that we use but not fully understand them?
Let me go first. Okay, so in the Mental Health America world, they have, it's called Before Stage 4. It was a hashtag for a while. And Stage 4 is like that ultimate place of despondency, crisis moment where things are really, really bad, right? Okay. A lot of time, effort, resources have been put into that intervention. Okay. So if you look at any state office of suicide prevention, any county health department that deals with suicide prevention, the focus is almost always, and I'm saying almost because to my experience, it's always, but I don't know what else is out there, but it's almost always centered on what to do in the time of crisis. No one talks about staying healthy. They only talk about intervening in a moment of crisis. In fact, when I was teaching the police academy, here locally, we would do crisis intervention training, CIT, and it was a week, a 40-hour week. It's required by the Nevada Peace Officer Standards and Training post requirements. So I would teach the intro to mental health, and then I would do scenarios and evaluations at the end. The whole week was for law enforcement officers to intervene with a mentally ill subject in the line of duty, de-escalate, point to services. That's a crisis intervention. That does not do anything to alleviate the root cause of what got them into that crisis. Now, when we think mentally ill subject encountered by law enforcement, usually people think some person struggling with schizophrenia on the side of the road in downtown of their city, possibly addicted to substances. That's usually not what happens. Usually it's a person in a place of despondency because of something that happened in their life, like an argument with a loved one. A person in a crisis, it's crisis intervention training, right? Not mental health training. Mental health is a component of it. Crisis intervention is a domestic dispute. It's a civil dispute. It's two guys in a parking lot at a tailgate or about to brawl, right? The same tactics and techniques that work on that person work on anybody else. De-escalate, re-regulate, drain the limbic system, offer solutions. But I'm more interested in what got those two guys ready to brawl. Why were you so dysregulated that you thought that violence was the solution when you're supposed to be partying before the football game? What's up with the couple that has the chronic response from law enforcement because they're fighting all the time in their house? Right? We can show up and be like, hey, calm down, sit over there, let's talk this through. All right, cool. You guys ready? Good. All right, we're going to get out of here. Nobody's getting arrested tonight. That's not getting upstream. That's very, very far downstream. That's stage four. I want us never to get to stage four. And I think, to answer your question, the answer for me, and this is my bias, but it's working, is we got to teach emotional functioning. We have to teach what the brain is doing in response to environment. It's not in any curriculum. The school districts in the K-12 system are sort of starting to rub up against SEL, but the emphasis is way more on the S than it is the E and the L, which is social emotional learning. They're talking about social, but they're not really talking emotions. And when they do talk emotions, it's very vague. It's very imprecise. It's not well researched. It's not well done. I think my stuff's really well done because it's based in research. You can watch the videos on Zephyr Wellness YouTube channel. But if we know well what our brains are doing in response to the environment, we can be in charge of our responses to the environment. If we don't know, we're going to react out of impulse. And that's how you end up with fights. That's how you end up with reflexive middle finger through the windshield while driving down the highway and somebody cuts you off. That's not a controlled response. And the firearms community, especially those who carry, need to be in control of their responses. And the best way to do that is to know your 10 emotions super well, know where they occur, know how they feel, know what they're trying to tell you, and then ride through them and act out of logic. That's the best way to do it. It will improve your communication. It'll improve your reactions to situations. It will improve your parenting. It will improve your boss-employee relationships. Everything will improve if you know your emotional functioning really, really well. I cannot beat that drum enough. And you can't just watch the videos one time and be like, cool, this is really interesting stuff. You got to rehearse it. Just like anything else you'd practice. If you're going to get good at it, you got to practice it and be like, ooh, I'm feeling shame right now. What is shame telling me? It tells me that I let somebody down. Now I'm feeling guilt. I should probably go make that correct. I should go make it right to them. I should repair the thing, right? That's what you got to do. Little tiny instances all the way up to big giant crises. That's how we navigate crisis. That's how we prepare. Gun community is all about preparedness in all sorts of form and fashion. Prepare well your brain for what the environment's going to do to you. So that's my response. That's how we get upstream from it. I am trying to work myself out of a job. That's why I produce content for free. I don't want people coming through my damn door anymore. I want to get Zephyr Wellness out of the psychotherapy business. Zephyr Wellness can turn into a brew pub and coffee shop. I say this all the time. If there's lease to be paid on my building, and I can't get out of the lease, I will gladly convert this place into something else that's not a mental health shop, because everybody will be happy and healthy. That would be awesome. And I'll be happy to do it. I'm not tied. This isn't my ego identity. Therapy is something I do for a job, and I would happily do something else if we didn't need me. Mike.
Yeah, I couldn't have said that better. So I love exactly what you said. I think two points I just want to add to that, and they're not necessarily adding to it, but one, you know, Kevin, I think we need to give people hope, right? Just in general, right? I love people that use empowering language. As a kid, I loved when people talked to me as if they believed in me and they believed that I could be better. I was just thinking about, like, I remember one of my football coaches, when I got into college, and I knew I wasn't going to play football in college because I wanted to go to a big school, but I got into the first school I got into. I remember sharing it with him. I was like, hey, I got into X school. And he was just like, oh, you're happy. And I was just like, yeah. And he's like, that's good. And I said, are you not happy for me? And he's like, I just think you're better than that school. He's like, you're smarter than that school. You know, he's like, I'm happy for you, but you could do better. But that's good. And I remember, like, in some weird way, he actually believed in me, that his disappointment was actually belief in me. But I was able to kind of feel that. But it always made me feel good because I was like, man, he thinks I'm smart. You know, I went to Arizona State. But
yeah, we make fun of you for that, too.
Yeah. Side note.
We should do a whole show on that, though. That would be a good show. Like overcoming one's own disbelief in self.
Yeah, I agree, because I think that, you know, you have to give people hope, and that goes for people that suffer from mental illness too. That, you know, I don't like when people are defeated, like you, Jake. Like when someone says, "Well, I can't do this because of this," right? Like I can't. Oh, I shouldn't own a gun because all my life I've been told that I'm crazy and stuff like that. It's like, well, no, you know your limitations, and I appreciate that. And you should be commended for knowing what you should and shouldn't be around, just like people know I can't be around alcohol, so I'm not going to be around alcohol. But at the same time, if you don't really believe that and you're just listening to everybody else tell you you're broken, you know, you could definitely be a responsible gun owner and suffer from mental illness. You look at, you know, people like Ashley, who says, like, I have this diagnosis, but it doesn't stop me from owning guns. You know, it just makes me more hypervigilant and knowing myself, right? So I love that. Like, let's give people hope. And the second thing that I throw on top of that is, you know, let's zig when we should have zagged. Like, no one is expecting the firearms industry to take the lead on this. And it's going to take a long time, right? Like, this change doesn't happen overnight, but every year this gets better. And every year that I see people from the 2A community preaching about mental health, it just warms my heart, because it's like the expectation level is never there for us to do that. So the more and more we get the force multipliers carrying the same messages of saying, yeah, we want to be involved in the conversation of saving lives and promoting better mental health and suicide prevention. I think, you know, 5-6 years from now, holy cow, like, where are we going to be with this? It's going to be really cool. You know, technology plus the manufacturers carrying the messages, the gun shops and the instructors. So, you know, that's how I feel like we get upstream to prevent the unpredictable. That's the way I see it. You know, on top of everything you said, Jake.
I want to address something that CloverTech put in the chat real quick because it's salient. You know, the comparison to physical health from mental health, it's like focusing on entirely on the emergency room and the emergency department. If you're chronically in the ED because of something, we probably should figure out what that something is instead of just giving you the metaphorical Band-Aid to fix it. This is why I'm not opposed to medication. I'm opposed to medication as a solution because it shouldn't be. I understand that certain people have endocrinology issues and they need to be on certain medications forever, but not in the psychotropic world, right? You know, with enough personal awareness and insight, you can know what makes you tick, and then you don't rely on the chemical interventions to solve that issue. You can just figure it out and do what you talk about, which is avoid troubling things and whatnot. And that leads into a second comment, which is, it's not that hard to figure out how certain things affect your mental health. You just got to pay attention. But maybe this society of electronic and device addicted ADD people just can't do it. And I would say, yes, that's why I harp so much on getting off of your screens. I just took I deactivated my Twitter account about a week ago. And the first 3 days I was constantly picking up my phone to like do something. Cause that was my habit. It was like, something's happening. Some conversation is occurring. I got to check in. I got to see what the latest post is on whatever news. My God, I didn't even watch the debate. I watched some clips of it afterward and it was pretty much what I expected, but I avoided all that. I didn't even know about the eating of cats thing until like 3 days later. It was glorious. I had to ask a buddy. I was like, what did I miss? He sent me a meme and I was like, okay, tell me what I missed. Cause you're not a meme guy. You don't send me memes. And it's awesome. Like, I've never been healthier. I did it a couple of years ago and it took me a good week. Now I'm a week in and I'm like, I'm stable. I don't keep grabbing my phone anymore. So get off your screens, get off your devices. All it does is stimulate. And we're not, our brains are not evolved to have that level of stimulus. So when you know, Chris, when you talk about like, we're not able to pay attention, it's literally true. So if you're constantly distracted by stimulus, and that stimulus is usually coming from a screen these days, imagine the ripple effect that that has on paying attention to anything else, including your own mind. Not to mention all the conversations you have with, you know, your bosses, your employees, your spouse, your kids. Like, can you really settle in and focus? Can you really be at peace? Ask yourself that. Are you really as calm and present as you were 15 years ago? I'm not. And I'm really going to have to work at that because I don't want to be what I have been the last few years. I want to be what I was like 15 or 20 years ago. That was a much happier time for me. And it's not because I was naive. It's because I wasn't surrounded by constant stimulus. So yeah, slow down, notice things, pay attention, get in charge of your own responses. That's how we get upstream. Long winded answer to Kevin's very short question. Anything else to add? We're pretty deep into this at this point. We thought this would be like a 20-minute.
We thought this would be a short one.
Yeah. Shocker.
I mean, it was short. We're like, this the study's garbage and it doesn't tell us anything we don't already know. While we're here, we might as well talk. So, all right. Well, we don't have any guests to ask how they tend to their mental health, but I will volunteer what I've been doing lately, which is I have unplugged from X, which is nice. And I'm trying to be more intentional about being in front of my children because they're 9 and 7 and I don't think I've neglected them per se, but there are plenty of times when I'm on the phone doing something that I think is important, like, you know, work related or WTTA related. I'm texting Mike and Kevin and they're like, dad, come look at this thing. And I'm like, just a minute. That's an inverted priority.
It really is. No offense, guys, but you don't come first in my life, but you have been. And there's the problem, right? We have to have a sober conversation with ourselves about how fully present we've been with our spouses mm-hmm. and our children. So that's how I'm tending to my mental health these days. I'm also very excited to welcome in a friend of the show, Jara Hutchins from Clearing the Chamber. She's coming to town to do a series of courses this weekend, and I get to teach with her tomorrow, which is very exciting. And my wife gets to learn from her, and I'm looking forward to this weekend for that reason. So, you know, getting out and doing some fun things and practicing hobbies, and I will get to shoot my very new pew, which is a Bursa Bar 15, 7.5 inch, chambered in 5.56. If you want an AR pistol, I've been told that it's good, but I have not yet fired it. So that's how I'm going to tend to my mental health.
Yeah. What was cool about that is like you immediately sent the picture of the WTTA card in the box. The I sent it to Raphael, and Raph is just like, that's awesome. And I was just like, yeah, it's awesome. You guys put the card in there. It's always nice to see it. And you know that there's nothing wrong. You know, my biggest fear is people stop doing it and don't tell you.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But so anybody out there, when you buy a firearm and you see the card in a box, don't hesitate to send me a picture of it, just because I do take joy in seeing that. It's really cool to see it out there.
Well, it might invite other people to do the same too. You know, and if you, again, invitation out there, if you are friends with accessories manufacturers, this doesn't have to be firearms. It could be firearms accessories manufacturers who you think would be friendly to this cause and want to put our stuff in their packaging. We would certainly be welcome to that introduction, because the more people who get exposed to this stuff, the healthier we all get.
Yeah. And before we leave, I want to bring up something. It's just top of mind thing. We are not a mental health organization per se, right? Right. A lot of people see us and they think that we have a staff and they could just call when they're in crisis or they want to talk to somebody. And we have like a mental health therapist that's there. We just had someone recently that inquired about that, and I feel was a little frustrated when we didn't have anybody in their area. But we're building towards this directory. This is a very slow ship to get mental health clinicians to say, I want to be listed as a culturally competent, you know, person in firearms. It's just not happened as fast as we wanted to. We do not have the funding to advertise this and probably the places that we could to get the masses to come in. But I just want people to know, when it comes to Walk Talk America, and I've said this before, everyone can have a different opinion on what is the most important thing Walk to Talk America does. Some would say it's the advocacy. Some would say it's Kids of Kings. Some would say it's the card in a box. Some would say it's the cultural competence courses. Some could say it's the courses for firearms instructors. The list goes on and on and on. Some could say it's our PSAs and our messaging, right? We try to be very diverse, and we try to come up with something new every year. If you think about it, that's crazy. It's almost like we feel like we have to put out an album every year. You know what I mean?
And my favorite is the podcast.
Okay, there you go. The podcast, right? One could make an argument that the podcast is the most important thing we do. But what I'm saying is work with us, people. Like, give us a break. Walk the Talk America is essentially the three people you're looking at right now on this screen, and everybody else ducks in and out on a volunteer basis. There's, you know, Jake, I always say you're a true superhero, because what you do is amazing to me. You put in time, brother, like that. No one could ever say you don't care, because I think you put in at least the time that somebody who's making $80,000 a year into something, you know, you do it. You walk the talk. But I just want people to understand that we try our best to help you. And we sprung into action on this person who was looking for somebody in his area. We didn't have somebody in his area. I feel like he got a little frustrated with me when I said, we don't have anybody in your area, but give us a minute. You know what I mean? And you actually, Jake, sprung into action to try to help almost instantly.
I found like eight people.
Yeah. I just want people to understand that we try to tell you, when you email us, hey, we're not a mental health organization. We don't have people on standby. If you are in crisis, here's the 988. Here's the suicide prevention hotline number. Call that. But we try to be ready for gun owners for any situation or any question they have, and we field them daily. But people also do need to understand that, you know, our directory of clinicians is just one little tiny aspect of Walk to Talk America and what we do. So bear with us, folks. And if you know any clinicians, to the listeners, if you know any clinicians that you think would want to be listed, please send them our way, because we want as many people in that directory as possible. And we have some awesome people, but it's very small, but we have some great clinicians on there already.
Mike, don't leave Jake hanging on how he tends to his mental health. How are you trying to stay mentally healthy these days?
How am I trying to stay mentally healthy? I know this is an easy way out, but doing this makes me mentally healthy. Focusing on this work makes me Amen. Mentally healthy.
Yeah, Amen. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so fortunate to do something I love. And I think about the song Vacation from Dirty Heads. Like, I truly enjoy what I do. I wish I made more money for it, but I think we all wish that. But I'm literally waking up every single day and I have a challenge that I gotta try to solve or tackle. And it's so gratifying to like get people. I know it's all anecdotal because we don't really put people's business out there, and not everything's meant to be shared, but it is just so rewarding to do this, and it really calms me. And not just because like I'm coming across people that really help me reframe things about my life, but it's just making a difference. So my mental health definitely is in a good spot because of the work I do, and I'm doing something I love. Like, I get frustrated. It's funny. I get frustrated because sometimes I feel like I'm talking to a wall when it comes to, you know, gun companies and stuff. And I'm like, why don't they see it like I see it? Like, why don't they see this as a win? Why do we put so much money in competition shooting, but we can't back organizations like WTTA or KidSafe? Like, take us out of it for a second. Hold my guns, whatever. You know, I look at the newswire every day and I just see all the money that's being poured into competition shooting. And I think that's great, but I think there's money for both, right? That stuff frustrates me, but I don't hate what I do. And I think that's the main point. Like, I can get frustrated at what I do. It can be frustrating sometimes, but I don't hate what I do. I actually love what I do. So that helps with my mental health.
Cool. Well,
at you're least, like, oh, awesome, yeah. Dude.
No, I mean, I agree. It's, I agree. It's yeah. Not everybody is in as blessed of a position as you and I to be able to do what we do and enjoy it more often than we don't. Right. And I think that's really special. So very well stated. If if you're frustrated in your life, take a look at what consumes most of your time and there you'll probably find the answer. On that note, Kevin, how do you tend to your mental health?
Right now, not the highest peak. We're working on a move that you two know about that's going to be across Strait. It's also Suicide Prevention Month. It's also Suicide Prevention Week. So there's a lot of work on top of some other work on the outside. So a little bit maybe down and run down now, but looking forward to getting that move done, being in a new place that's going to be a lot better for our mental health and our kids, but just kind of keeping the expectation that this suck isn't going to last forever and it's going to be short term and well worth it.
Thanks, Yehuda. Cowboy Yehuda. Up.
Yehuda with the greatest answer ever, the most dark despair.
He's like the star in Super Mario Brothers. I'm just waiting for the cold sting of death to embrace me.
Live in hope and die in despair. Yeah.
If you haven't listened to the Yehuda Reamer interview, oh my goodness. Man, we had a good time with him. All right. Thanks everybody for tuning in. And I keep saying that like I'm from the 19th century. Oh, they didn't even have tuning in the 19th century. Must be the 20th century. I'm all turned around. All right. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for streaming. Thanks for paying attention to us. Thanks for all the support. If you like this, share it around. And apparently, if you give us a rating and review, that they say helps us too. So on behalf of our entire Walk Talk America family, we wish you all great mental wellness. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people. 10 hearts, one beat. 100 hearts, one beat. 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow. The flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
In the early 1900s, certain companies were off-gassing highly toxic fluoride gases into the atmosphere. The surrounding communities began to get sick. Laws were enacted to compel these corporations to install scrubbers to convert these gases into fluorosilicic acid, still highly toxic but containable. Now these companies had a stockpile of this poison, and there was no affordable way to dispose of it. Lucky for them, one of their major stockholders was also the Secretary of the Treasury, who was responsible for the Public Health Service at the time. And by 1950, the U.S. government began buying this toxic, untreated industrial waste product and dumping it into our drinking water. Reputable studies show that it's causing various cancers and other disease. With the Alexa Pure Pro, you can have clean drinking water and a remedy to this madness. Available now at InfoWarsStore.com.